get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have an episode focused purely on Amazon FBA. So it's geared towards developing physical products. Now, obviously, as niche website builders and online business owners, we're predominantly focused on affiliate marketing, display advertising, and even digital products. But as I mentioned in the podcast, if you go back a couple of episodes ago, when I interviewed my friend Owen Walker, we actually talked off camera, and his thoughts are that as the space grows in digital marketing, there's going to be so much supply and so many people putting out digital education that eventually it's going to become essentially free, like these podcasts are, and they're going to be lead magnets essentially for physical products. And I somewhat agree with that in terms of, I get turning your online business into a more established real world business and brand. And I think that's where physical products also come in. So we cover things like sourcing manufacturers, how to find them, kind of what you're looking for there, optimizing your Amazon listings. You know, why use Amazon FBA over having your own Shopify store as an affiliate marketer? Ways that essentially being an affiliate marketer and having your own website that you already have traffic, how you can leverage that into an Amazon FBA store instead of starting an Amazon FBA store from scratch. We cover things like fees that you need to watch out for, how much you need to start in terms of creating your own product, and a whole host of other areas of essentially starting Amazon FBA in terms of things like conversions, PPC, and all that. So Alex and Tom do a great job here. They're essentially making six figures a month doing this with their brand, and they're looking to make multiple products and brands within that. So you get a really good insight into how professionals essentially doing this. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right, welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we've got a duo. We've got Tom and Alex here to talk about Amazon FBA. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having us. Good to be here.
Thanks for coming on. All right. So maybe let's start with a brief background of each of you. I don't know who wants to go first. Tom, you're directly next to me on the thing. So maybe you go first with a brief intro and then Alex, you can go straight after.
Oh, man. Alex always takes that question, but I'll go first. Fine. So I'm Tom. I feel like I'm on a dating show. So me and Alex met in Barcelona. We both live here in Spain amongst kind of the expat community. We started a business together probably in 2020. We kind of joined up, launched our first Amazon FBA brand, which we've now kind of scaled up, and we're doing that full time. Prior to that, kind of bit of a mixed background, but mainly kind of sales, entrepreneurship, kind of bit more physical sales in person. So things like an activity center, arranging corporate events, like that kind of thing. And now it's fully kind of e-commerce for me.
Yeah, and I was previously, before I jumped in and did e-com full-time, I was working in SEO. So I worked at a SaaS company called Typeform. So I was doing SEO, but I was I after doing it for like 4 years in house, I didn't really enjoy it that much anymore. So I was trying to try a lot of different things to get out and work for myself. I started Amazon just after seeing, I think I just saw a video on YouTube, the same sort of thing as everyone, I think, you know, like probably just searching how to make money online, heard about it somewhere, Reddit, something like that, and then jumped straight in, made a lot of mistakes very early on. Then I partnered up with Tom, and yeah, the rest is so history.
Some more mistakes, but not as many mistakes.
Thankfully, that wasn't a mistake.
Awesome. Well, we've got essentially 55 minutes before you've got to jump on another meeting, so I'm going to jump straight into things. In terms of current revenue, I think you share that on your YouTube channel, so assuming you're okay with sharing it on here. If not, let me know. But what kind of revenue are you making per month currently with the Amazon FBA source?
So at the moment, we're doing six figures. So we're averaging probably about 110,000. The niche that we're in, yeah, sorry, a month. Yeah, the niche that we're in, most of the demand peaks in spring. So our sort of like Q4 is between like March, and it's probably going to run through till probably like the end of August, September. It'll start trailing off a little bit. But in the last 12 months, we've invested a lot. Like, we put a lot of money in. We've launched a few new products. Mm. So we actually went in the last 12 months. This time last year, I think we were doing about $30,000 a month.
Nice.
And then our biggest month this year was in May. I think it was May. We did $140,000 in revenue.
Is this one brand or is this multiple brands?
Yeah, it's just the one brand.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. So let's dive straight into, this is an area I'm personally interested in to get into the space of selling physical products too. A couple of podcast episodes ago, a good friend of mine, Owen Walker, was on, and he mentioned off camera, he thinks that the digital space in terms of online education is going to start to become free, like these podcasts are, and they will be almost like lead banks to sell physical products. And the idea of having your online education selling your physical products is where he believes the future of online marketing will go. I kind of somewhat agree with him in that part. But as someone who's, I guess, in the online space, selling things as an affiliate, maybe you rank for some best posts for whatever that product is. You maybe have your own digital products. How would I go about getting started with, I think the biggest challenge is sourcing the product. So how would I go about finding the product that's not maybe some cheap Chinese crap that's going to break or being drop shipped by a million other people on Amazon, and something that can be essentially customized and manufactured to what I want with my brand? Do you have any tips? It's kind of a broad general question, but are there any tips regarding around that?
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of where you, sorry, I'll run myself. Sorry. I'm sure you've got different points to me, but basically the way, just to kind of center it around Amazon, because obviously that's our kind of, that's our area of expertise. About 5 years ago, you could pretty much just find some cheap Chinese crap and slap a logo on it and throw it online. And it sold, and people made money, and people even sold those businesses, and it went pretty well. Over the last 2 to 3 years, it's got much more professional. And I think it's just happened every kind of 3 or 4 years on Amazon. There's been like a new generation of like an iteration of how professional you need to be. But now the way that you win nowadays is with those custom products. It's finding something that's selling. People are definitely overcomplicated. You haven't got to invent something brand new. But if you find a product that has real pain points and customize it, find good suppliers. Like you said, that is very important. I think generally people go to the same places. It's Alibaba, those kind of places, just to put you in touch with the suppliers. But from there on out, you know, you need to be super professional in terms of getting samples made. You can't just kind of roll the dice and expect it to be okay. You need to get multiple suppliers. One little tip for anyone watching is if the product you find has dozens of suppliers in Alibaba, probably don't launch it. People think it's great because you can find it and there's a load of prices. You can beat them down on prices. But if it's super easy to find and it's not on Amazon yet, 99 times out of 100, that is about to become super saturated because everyone's racing to produce it. Mm. Even the factories themselves are about to launch it on Amazon. So the more difficult it is to find a supplier, almost the better it is in a way. Mm. You want to kind of find a surefire sign of a good opportunity. What was your point?
Yeah, I was going to say one of the things that people that are completely new to Amazon, they kind of misunderstand or get wrong in the beginning, is essentially everything comes down to demand, the core of it. So you might have, for example, you might have a brand that's in a very specific niche, but the reality is, I mean, off Amazon, let's say you have an affiliate website and it's in a very specific niche, it might not make sense on Amazon. It might just mean that there might not be enough demand on whatever it is on Amazon. So the first thing that you kind of have to do if you are sort of like an affiliate site owner is, I mean, if you're already driving that traffic to Amazon, I mean, then obviously it makes sense. But if you're not, if you're sort of driving it direct to the manufacturer or whatever it is, then you've got to verify that on Amazon, there's actually enough demand for those products if you want to go into the market and launch it. Because one of the mistakes that we see people make is they think they have this idea for an amazing product and maybe they find a supplier, but then when they actually launch it, there's just not enough demand on Amazon to actually make it work. So that's kind of the core thing, is making sure there's enough existing demand already on Amazon.
Do you ever worry that the business is completely reliant on Amazon, that if something happened, I don't know, Amazon did whatever, that then your business would then essentially be, not shut down, but decimated essentially from whatever maybe Amazon did? Is that something that ever concerns you?
Every day. it's scary because they can and they do shut down accounts at like the drop of a hat. We've had over 100 days banned in our, in our first 4 months selling, we had over 100 days banned. Wow. So most of it. So the first brand we actually launched together in the UK, that got banned for, we never found out the reason. We actually ended up killing that brand. So yeah, it can really kill your business. Luckily that wasn't too far down the road. You do kind of forget when things start going well, you almost forget that's the risk. But of course, yeah, we discuss that quite often about diversifying off Amazon. And you've got like a Shopify store and a few other bits. But because Amazon is such a massive source of traffic, it's so hard to compete with them. It's where to spend your time, right? For us, that we want to scale the business to the level we want to get it to on Amazon. And then you start focusing off Amazon, because the percentage of business and sales you're going to make up from your own website is pretty unlikely it's going to be anywhere near the size of the Amazon sales. So yeah, we do bear it in mind, but there's enough people we've met and there's enough success stories that for us it's worth the risk. As long as you play within the rules, like Jeff's got a lot of rules and you have to be pretty careful about it, but as long as you do that, then you're okay.
So would that mean then, based on that, you would typically advise someone, for example, say an affiliate website, to, if they're going to launch a physical product, to launch it through Amazon FBA versus their own Shopify store, just because you also have the organic reach on Amazon?
I think so, yeah. I mean, there's somebody that's in our niche, actually, and I think they actually kind of did it the opposite way to us, is they originally had an affiliate website that was driving probably 300,000 clicks a month. And what we saw is they had this affiliate site and they were driving sort of affiliate revenue to tons of different products on Amazon within the niche. And then they started bringing out their own products. I think there's a couple of different strategies that you can take. Obviously, you can drive that traffic direct to Amazon. And then you get all of the benefits of, you get more you get discounts on the commissions. For example, if you drive external traffic and then it converts on Amazon, you actually get a percentage of the commission that Amazon charged, the referral fee back, which is great for your margins. But also as well, you're gonna really improve your organic ranks on Amazon. So it's kind of, if you've got that existing traffic base on an affiliate site and then you actually launch your own products on Amazon, it's obviously a huge advantage over over sellers that don't have that.
Yeah,
I think, you know, our experience isn't in the D2C side. It's not really on the Shopify side. So we're obviously kind of biased to the Amazon side, but there's just a lot of benefits with driving traffic to Amazon. You know, the conversion rates are generally much higher because people just have that trust. Obviously all of the fulfillment side, all of that sort of stuff. I mean, I know you can drive traffic direct to Shopify. People purchase through Shopify, and then you can actually automatically fulfill it through Amazon if you have it stored at their warehouses, at their storage facilities. The only downside really to, well, not the only downside, but one of the downsides to Amazon is you don't really get any of the customer data. So, you know, you get a name and an address, you don't get the email. One of the great things that we do is we have like, one of the great things that sounded like a bit one of the many great things that we do. One of the things that's worked really well for us is we have product inserts. And I think a great strategy, if you do have an existing affiliate site, is to build that email list, launch your product on Amazon, and then you leverage that existing email list to drive traffic when you launch your product. So I think if you do have the skills, if you already have the affiliate skills, it's great to transfer over to Amazon FBA for sure, because those skills that you've got from driving that traffic, from building those email lists, all of it's going to come in super handy, because most Amazon FBA sellers, they don't really have those skills to, you know, they don't have the skills of building the email lists, of driving that external traffic. So I think, if you're in the affiliate space, there's a lot of positives and a lot of advantages that you have that are really going to help you out with FBA for sure.
Nice. I wanted to, before going a little bit further into some of the Amazon FBA, like fees and things to watch out for there, I wanted to come a little bit back to the sourcing of the product. How are you vetting your manufacturers that you find? You mentioned Alibaba, so I'm assuming you're using Alibaba. So how are you vetting the manufacturers into the quality and things? Are you ordering samples from multiple manufacturers to judge them on that way, or is there another way you go about it?
Yeah, exactly right, James. So basically you find suppliers on there, you can see the ones that are kind of verified and highest rated, and see, I mean, some of them it's pretty obvious they've got fake reviews and you can tell when it's a legitimate review, to be honest. And then you're just getting samples sent across. So get sent across to your house, we're getting multiple versions of a similar product. We also would order your potential competitors' products as well, just to test where they're coming from. What you'll quite often find in smaller niches, and I know you're focused around niche website building, right? So we fully agree in terms of people that do that have a great opportunity, because if you can niche, like we call it like niching down, it's like niches within niches, which they're the passion niches. That's where we like to play. That's where there's a lot of opportunity on Amazon. So if you can get down to those suppliers, there generally aren't that many suppliers, as I mentioned earlier, that the products that we like to sell. So you'll often find, actually, you might find a factory, they already produce your main competitor's products. And to be honest, most of them tell you that, but they still want more business. Maybe they can't sell you the exact same product as your supplier, as your competition, but they'll let you know, they kind of prove that they are the supplier. You know the quality of their products already. And then that's kind of how you verify it. Some of them are rubbish. That is how it is. You've got to go through a few shit ones sometimes. But generally, you just, as long as you do good quality control and you don't rush it. I think a lot of people are so desperate to launch, they'll just pick the first one and throw it up. And then they're not doing quality control either, so they're not getting inspections done when the products are being made. That's a potential massive error, because if you send in 5,000 units and they've all got a fault, then you know that's your capital tied up for 6 months and a kind of a long, painful process. So as long as you're vetting them properly, like I said at the start, and getting inspections done, then generally it works okay, even though most of us have never met our factories in person.
How are you getting inspections done on the products?
Sorry, Tom. Yeah, we pay, there's sort of independent companies that do it. So you usually pay like a day rate or a half a day rate, usually between about $150 to $250. If you have a good relationship with a freight forwarder, we actually do with ours. So they also send us, you know, they receive the goods, they unload them, and then they'll send us photos and like reports on what's going on. It is always best to get an inspection done on every shipment, because, you know, factories have workers that come and go, and even simple things like making sure everything is in a package that should be, you know, in a box or a bag, for example. Sometimes customers get them and then there's two parts of it missing, and it's just because the factory's been a bit sloppy with their QA. So obviously when you're making orders of tens of thousands of dollars, if there's a lot of those, then it can add up. So we generally get an independent inspection company to come in and do an inspection. They send you a full report. They just pull out random units and then go through it all, send you a full report with photos and videos and nice. And all that stuff.
Okay. So say I'm someone looking to listen, I listen to this podcast and go, okay, I want to go start launching my own physical product. Realistically, how much would I need to start up to essentially get the first batch of products ready to essentially sell? It's a very general question, but
that's probably the question that we get. People like DM us all the time on Twitter and Instagram and things and ask us that. I think there's a minimum that you want nowadays, and that keeps kind of creeping up, to be honest. So when we started out, I'd say that was probably like maybe $5,000. I'd say that's more towards 7, 8, 9, 10 now. The more the better, to be honest. Obviously, the higher budget you have, you can start kind of fishing in areas where other people aren't. So like 90% of people haven't got maybe like $10,000-$15,000 to start with. So they're looking at, everyone's looking at the same products and they're all using the same tools. And they're all looking at these, like, psychologically, they're looking at low price products because they think that's what they can afford. If you do the numbers properly and you can work it out, like, you're better off perhaps selling 200 units of a $50 product than you are selling 400 units of a $25 product.
Yeah.
But people don't often look that way because they want to get as many sold as possible and get the units moving through. So the kind of what we advise is, if you have say 10K as a budget, you need to have enough money for your first order of inventory, your second order of inventory, because you're not going to get that money back from the first order for at least, you know, you got the lead time, you got the shipment time, you've got to sell through the units. Amazon aren't going to pay you straight away. You're probably also going to hit your marketing pretty heavy at the start. So that money is tied up. And if the launch goes well, you know, you probably immediately need to reorder your product. So you need the money for order two. And maybe you're not profitable in that first order because you've got to drop the price to rank. So there's all these kind of things that play into it. And people, that's probably one of the biggest mistakes people make. They spend all of their budget on that first order.
Mm.
And then they're kind of screwed because they're like, oh, I actually can't afford to even keep up with the expansion. And to add to that as well, just while we're on it, is the most important thing, and it, we kind of realized for us, was the numbers are the most important part of the business. They're not the sexiest part. Like the branding and stuff's way more fun, but doing your numbers down to the ground and knowing every single charge you're going to have, your likely marketing cost to a percentage, like per unit, and then knowing your net margins and your net ROI. People focus way too much on the gross numbers because they look cool, but then the net is obviously what's going to really affect your business. So if you're with the ROI, everything we do now, we look for a net ROI of 100% or more. And that allows us to, anything over 100% is extra cash in the business that we can use to launch new products or keep up with expansion. If you're below that 100%, even though you're making profit still, if your product starts selling increasingly well, unless you invest more money into the business, you just can't possibly keep up with the growth. Mm. And that's something that people should definitely bear in mind from day one.
I gotcha. I actually watched, I think it was the mistakes video that you did, Alex, a little while ago. And just to piggyback on what you were saying, Tom, there, obviously making calculations for your products in terms of ROI, how much you're going to spend. What are some of the hidden fees when doing Amazon FBA? And then how do you do your calculations on a product where maybe you haven't sold before, you're not sure what advertising costs are going to be, you're not maybe sure your typical price point because you're testing that. How do you figure out then, overall the total cost of doing business essentially from those calculations?
I think one of the simplest ways that we try and do it now is a lot of people focus on sort of the A cost, which is the advertising cost of sale. So it's basically how much you spend in PPC to generate, you know, whatever PPC revenue. But we focus everything now around TACOS, which is the total advertising cost of sale. So what you can do, you can kind of apply that. We generally aim for like a between a 12% and 15% TACOS, and we can apply that to what we think the revenue is going to be, and then it gives you a really good overview. But you really have to break it down line by line of absolutely every single cost that's involved. So Tom's like an absolute wizard on this now, but honestly, in the beginning, there's a lot of things like even like pallet fees, like unloading pallets, and you know, ground fees and FedEx fees, picking it up when it's in the States. There's, and this is one of the things like why we encourage people so often to get guidance, because as Tom said, one of the mistakes is people place their first order and then they don't have enough money for the second order. I made that mistake when I first started Amazon on my own. I literally had to get a bank loan at a stupid APR because I didn't have enough cash to make the second order. So my product sold really well and then I ran out of cash. So there are a lot of hidden fees, even like taxes on the actual fees and stuff like that, that can catch people out, taxes on your PPC. PPC itself, it's not a hidden cost, but it's a cost that people really misunderstand. So what a lot of people will do is they'll work out all of their COGS, so the cost of goods sold, and then you know what their landed is. They'll work out what they're going to sell it for. They'll work out their Amazon fees, and they'll say, "All right, great. You know, my profit margin is 30%, but that's your profit margin on an organic sale." But what ends up happening generally with Amazon is when you launch, almost all of your sales are going to be through advertising, through PPC. Because for the first 2 to 3 weeks, what you're trying to do is you're launching, you're trying to get as many sales as you can. The more sales you get, the better you rank organically. Our business now at the moment, where our revenue is about 50% PPC sales and 50% organic sales. So really what ends up happening is that 30% profit margin, once it's actually all said and done, is actually half that. Yeah. Because, you know, so a lot of people make that mistake, and it's not like a hidden fee, it's just kind of a misunderstanding of how it all works and how much advertising contributes to your actual revenue. And like Tom said, we aim now for 100% ROI after PPC. So after we've spent all our, you know, PPC, we're still getting 100% ROI. But most people that we speak to, when they're struggling, after they've paid all their PPC and their advertising, they're maybe getting 30, maybe 40% ROI at the most. Mm. So that's one of the kind of big sort of, it's not a fee, but like kind of a hidden cost that people don't always understand properly.
To add one little point to that, I think what you see really often, and we see this because we did this, and let's say you look at a number and we were like, even if the net ROI was like 109%, and then you'd be like, we used to be kind of be like, yeah, we'll make it work, I'm sure we'll like squeeze it, we'll probably refine the PPC, we'll probably like, maybe we'll spend nothing on PPC because we're ranked so well. And then that's just the wrong take, because over time, generally, you want to obviously be a bit more pessimistic with it and give yourself that buffer. And more often than not, like obviously the Amazon fees can increase, you might get hit with a random charge that you didn't think about, like your stuff gets delayed at customs, whatever it is. And then yeah, you can't, you wish it to work, but it just doesn't. And you just need to be super dialed in and cautious to know the numbers through and through, and basically just don't lie to yourself, because you just screw yourself over for kind of 6 months.
Yeah. I wanted to jump into some of that as well with the organic search rankings on Amazon and general conversion. So what are some things you can do to help increase the conversion rate of your product on Amazon? Because obviously a lot of people will say, you know, Amazon's saturated. I mean, even if you search, I think one of your videos, Alex, you looked at massage guns, or I think it was your Purple Cow video, maybe you can dive into a bit too. Like, all the massage guns look the same. Like, I've even looked at massage guns, I'm pretty sure, on Amazon before, and you're like, they're all the same. You just go by price point because they pretty much will come with the same stuff with no any different kind of features. So how do you make your product stand out so that you're not just making sales from your website, you're making sales from people searching on Amazon? And then how do you look to essentially optimize your listing to help with conversions as well? Because obviously you have options within the text and titles and all that stuff.
Yeah, so to be honest, I think this is one of the things that people, they kind of overcomplicate as well a little bit, is essentially it comes down to like the same as any business. If you're selling anything, whether it's a service, a physical product, like if you go in and you just look, sound, and kind of feel the same as everybody else, you're not really going to get any attention. But that's magnified 1,000 times over on Amazon, because the customer is literally looking at hundreds of competitor products next to your product. So even if you imagine if you've got, if you've got an affiliate site, like your title of the page needs to stand out. You need to increase the click-through rate, all of that stuff. So you've got to do as much as you can to stand out, basically. One trap I think that people fall into is they see what already exists and they see what's doing well, And I think it's almost this like subconscious thing where they think, well, that's doing well. If I do the same, I'm going to do well. And it's kind of like, it just doesn't really make any sense when you think about it. But I think subconsciously, it's like this safety aspect of, I see what's doing well, I'm just going to kind of do the same. So you'll see people launch products and even their branding is almost identical to what currently exists. So the way that we approach Amazon is our brand, we don't want it to look like any of the other brands. So we kind of split it into two different things. One is like a visual differentiation. The other is we call it a value differentiation. So visually, you've got to look different. You can't look the same as all the other brands, all of the other listings. Your hero image can't look the same. You're not going to get any clicks, or you know, you're not going to get as many clicks, whatever. And then you've actually got to improve the product itself and add more value through the actual product. I think overall, to be honest, and Tom and I were just discussing this today, the actual standard on Amazon, we think the bar is really, really low in terms of how well optimized the listings are. If you look, the vast majority of people on there, well, are the Chinese sellers, and they don't really do a good job at the branding. They don't even hire native speakers to write their copy. One thing that we're really, really big on our listings is keeping it very, very simple. So what you'll often see on Amazon is you'll scroll through the pictures of a product and like a massage gun, for example, and it'll have a picture of a massage gun and then it'll have like 7 or 8 bubbles around it with all this information and all these features and all these things that it does. And what you got to remember is customers' attention span is tiny. They scroll very quickly, they browse very quickly. So what we like to do in order to increase our conversion rate is we kind of have 3 or 4 very key benefits of the product that we like to communicate in a single image. So image 2 will have 1 very clear benefit, then image 3. So we really try to simplify things. And before we launch the listing, we have a very good understanding of what the key benefits of our product is, what the actual need of the customer is. And then we try to communicate that very clearly with the images and then also the copy.
Are the images then, you take them yourself to upload on there?
Yeah, we do. Our particular niche, like we can't really do the shoots ourselves. It's hard to explain without saying what it is. But basically, we have a guy in California. We send him all of our products. He's a professional photographer and videographer. He's amazing, to be honest. He's not cheap. He's good value, but a lot of people, I guess, maybe couldn't afford they don't think they can afford that at the start. So they take a shortcut and they get someone from Fiverr.com to do a Photoshop for them of their product, because that, as Alex said, that's what a lot of other people do. So they think, oh, that's fine, they're doing it, we'll do it. We overpay almost for our photographer. He builds a set. We get real like lifestyle images. We get real studio images. And that alone in our niche, and honestly in most niches, that is almost enough to stand you apart, because I mean, we look at it every day. So to us, we can spot bad Photoshop like a mile off, but some of them are like insultingly bad. And you think, how are people, they're still making money. Some, there's millions of dollars a month, some of them with like unbelievably bad Photoshop. And obviously over time, like 3D renders are becoming more popular now, and they can be really good for certain products. But in our opinion, like nothing, depending on your niche, nothing beats a real life image and a real life photography. So for us, that's something that you should always budget for. Like you said earlier about your budget at the start, photography should be a huge chunk of that. Because if you want to give yourself the best shot possible, you can't launch with subpar images, because you can have a great product. You might have 5 good images. If you've cheapened out and then like your 7th image is crap, then to us, like you're as bad as your worst image. So why do that? You know, you should keep everything to a super high standard, keep the branding looking great. And one further point with the images and the copy. So like Alex said, we keep ours really simple. You have the bullet points on Amazon, but like, if we're really honest, like I shop on Amazon quite a lot. I hardly ever read the bullet points because they're boring and you don't really care. If you can get all the information you need from those images and a video perhaps and the title, then great. And then we can then use the bullet points. Yeah, you might do a couple of nice hooks and you've reinforced the main benefits, but then the rest of the text in there, to be honest, Amazon is still one of those, the algorithm, you can still kind of keyword stuff it to an extent. So you haven't had, especially when you launch as well, like you want to be indexing as far and wide as possible with a highly targeted relevant keyword list that you build before you launch. So we build around that, and then our text, it's readable, but like if I'm really honest, like it's a bit weird. You wouldn't know we say it in person. It's just like it's like Google's too smart for it, but Amazon isn't yet. So you can still kind of stuff it to a degree.
Gotcha. Let's jump down some of that keyword research side. Obviously, maybe as an affiliate marketer, maybe that's the intent from this site, but again, maybe wanting to get more organic sales and rank in that organic side. It's the keyword. How do you define keywords that are low enough competition to go after for your product? Because, I mean, as many people, as I mentioned before, maybe say, you know, certain niches are saturated. For example, massage gun, that's a pretty broad keyword. Are you looking at more long tails and trying to rank for massage gun for XYZ?
Yeah, I think it honestly depends. There's a few different factors. If you're going into massage guns and you don't have an absolutely massive budget, then going after those top terms is just going to be burning cash. So one approach that you can take is only go after the long tail terms to begin with, rank for those, and then slowly start to rank for the head terms. We obviously don't really recommend selling massage guns. So the kind of niches that we go into, we feel comfortable that we have a big enough budget, we have a good enough brand, and we know what we're doing, where we can go after all of the keywords. But it's not a bad idea if you are just sort of starting out, you know, going after smaller niches and during the launch, perhaps targeting those longer tail keywords. But it's a little bit different than traditional SEO in the sense of, like, you know, with traditional SEO, if you've got a brand new domain, you're not going to go after these huge keywords that are super competitive because it's just going to be almost impossible. But you can actually do that with Amazon. Okay. You know, you can go after the top keywords in the niche as long as you've got a big enough budget to keep up with the sales velocity. Amazon SEO really is about, you know, conversion rates and sales velocity. If you're selling more than other people, Amazon is just going to slow you, put you up the organic ranks. But that's where people do make a mistake as well. And obviously, like, the top massage guns are probably selling 500 units a day. Okay. And you'll get people ordering, placing an order, and they'll order 500 units for their first order. And then they'll be trying to compete for the keyword massage gun. And they might sell one unit a day, and then the people at the top are selling 500 units a day. So you're never, ever going to get anywhere near page one. So you may as well not bother. So that's what a lot of it comes down to, budget. You know, I think one of the things about FBA is a lot of people see it as kind of like this side hustle, you know, and perhaps a little bit hopeful that you can get into it with a couple of grand and sort of spin it up.
Yeah.
What we'd recommend is you've really got to treat it like a proper business. I'm not saying that people don't treat side hustles like a proper business, but you really do need at least $10,000 to give it a good go. And I tried it the other way. I tried it with a few thousand dollars, and you know what? You're going to learn the ropes, and you can make some sales, and you can, you know, maybe have a good time, whatever, and learn some stuff. But honestly, if I could go back to when I originally started, I would take longer to actually launch. I would like save more money so that I had more money to give it a better go. And then get more guidance along the way, because I think we would be like 12 months ahead of where we are now if, when I very first started it, I'd approached it properly with like a big enough budget, because so much of it comes down to your budget. It affects everything so much, and like we said, it's one of the most important parts of it is like your numbers and your budget and everything. So,
with your question with regards to the where do we find the keywords part of the question as well, so. There's, I mean, anyone who perhaps watches this and then goes on to our channel. So we work at the moment with a guy called Adam Heist. He's like a YouTube name in the Amazon space, kind of like an authority figure. And we learned from him and another guy called Brandon Young, who kind of promoted this technique a few years ago of building this master keyword list. And to us, like, we did it from day one when we worked together, and we didn't really realize how many people aren't aware of this. And people throw up a listing and they're not optimizing the title, they're not optimizing the bullet points, they're not including any keywords. They're just kind of looking at one or two competitors and just kind of seeing what they've written, maybe they copy it. So there's more of a systemized approach now. There's tools that we use where we pull data from Amazon, put it through this kind of Google spreadsheet tool, and we'll build out a huge keyword list. And we'll kind of give each keyword a score of relevancy. Mm. From there, we'll also see the search volume. And then, yeah, perhaps when you launch, like Alex said, you're not going to go after Massage Gun. It's got 200,000 searches a month, but you might see there's a really good chunk of 800 volume per month to like 10,000 volume per month. A real nice chunk in there that you can see people aren't very well indexed for. You can go after them. And then from there, that's when you then start attacking page two, page one of the higher volume keywords. But yeah, it's almost like a bit of a, it's not a hack, but it's that is literally how it works. And you honestly wouldn't believe how many people don't know that.
Mm. So then how are you analyzing, I guess, the competition within that? So for example, you find those long tail Massage Gun keywords, 800 to 10,000 search volume. How do you analyze that page to see, okay, the competition here isn't well optimized for these keywords, you can outrank them?
I mean, generally what you'll find, I mean, we literally have a tool where it will show us for certain keywords where there's gaps. Yeah. So where the big competitors don't actually rank. It's not really a case with this of looking at the front page and saying, you know, it's more looking at the data. It's okay. Looking at, you know, for that specific keyword, which of the big players. What we do is we take the top 10 sellers in the niche, so the ones that have the most sales, and then we can see the keywords where perhaps three of them don't rank very well. And it might be because they either don't have that keyword present on the listing or they just don't really convert very well for that. But you can identify sort of like little gaps. So it's not really from looking at the actual search results page. Yeah. It's more looking at the actual data.
Gotcha. And another thing you mentioned, obviously, with ordering units, you mentioned how maybe top competitors selling 500 a day, so you order 500 a day. You mentioned on one of your mistake videos that people will order a small amount in the beginning, sell out, and then you talked about sales velocity being part of that ranking factor. So how do I calculate how much I need to order so that if I do sell out, well, I get to that point, I can still continue selling and keep that sales velocity increasing or constant, so I don't then lose those rankings as I'm trying to order another batch.
So, I mean, the math you kind of want to do on it is, this is where like knowing your budget really comes into play, because I think it's natural for people on their first product, they want to just like test the waters out. Mm. And they think, I'll put a few grand into it. Let's just test it. That product, let's say it launches and it flies and it sells out and people celebrate that, which is insane to us, because that means when you come back and so you're sending Amazon the signals that you are a person that stocks out, or you're a product that stocks out. So when you come back in stock again, some products take 3 months to produce, right? So you're back in stock, let's say a 3 month turnaround. You've then basically got to launch all over again. You've got to go super aggressive on your PPC, and you're coming from really far out. It's going to cost you a fortune again to get back there. So definitely don't do that. And if you can budget, let's say you look at the top performers, the decision you need to make is like Alex said, do it slowly and be really, really sure of your decision. You shouldn't be launching a product thinking, oh, maybe it'll work. You should know this, there's like 90% chance this will work. Now, obviously you can't always be right. Like one out of every four products might fail. But at the end of the day, if you can plan it out, let's say you look at the top seller or top couple of sellers, what we generally would do, it's going to be pretty unlikely you're going to come in and immediately match their sales. That's just because they've been there for a while. You can see that on the data. You can look back at their history. But let's say, you know, maybe you can take 50% of them. It's top. We might do an optimistic, an expected, and a pessimistic. Mm. So you budget it out. You want to basically cover yourself for 3 months of sales, effectively. Picking them out, normally about 3 months, because that's the time it takes to produce your product, to ship it to the States, whichever country you're going to, list it, sell it. So ideally, the way you should plan it is, let's say it's 3 months. Within 2 weeks of launching your product, you're placing that second PO, and then you're keeping that stock. You're keeping in stock, then you're kind of hitting it hard for the second, or basically you're not stocking out, so you're not having a second launch. Or when your stock arrives again, you kind of can hit it even harder. Hopefully you then can, but at that point you're ranking better. You can increase or decrease your PPC, depends on what you want to do. But then you can keep up with your growth. And that's basically how you plan it out. It's difficult, I'll be honest. There's no exact science to it. So yeah, you may still stock out sometimes. Like we've even recently, we've had certain weeks where we've just gone crazy and we do our best to have buffer stock, but there's sometimes it just happens. And if you've been on Amazon for a while and you stock out, it's definitely not as bad because they know that you're a solid product. So they're going to rank you again within honestly a day or two sometimes. But when you're just starting out, yeah, definitely err on the side of caution. Make sure you're kind of budgeting everything properly. And then, yeah, you generally, as a rule of thumb, 3 to 4 months is a good amount.
Gotcha. I've got a question on, I guess, on the product side. So let's say, I'll use the massage gun as an example. I don't know if the
example... It's like one big advert for massage gun.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the easiest one to use. But I don't know if it fits in this example. But let's say I'm like, my website, I say I'm a recovery expert. I talk about foam rollers, massage guns, whatever else. And I want to create the premium massage gun product. So my brand is premium. Everything's quality. Typically, at least in my experience, I don't know if it's the same with thoughts about you guys, people go to Amazon to find a product because it's genuinely cheaper than if you go into the store to buy it. If I was going to launch a premium product, would you still look to launch that on Amazon? I don't know, maybe your guys is a premium product as well, but would you look to launch that on Amazon or your own store? Because obviously there's your price might be double the price of most of the listings on Amazon because of that perception.
Yeah, I mean, definitely on Amazon. I mean, I was literally looking today I've just moved into a new flat, so I'm going to get an ergonomic chair. Ergonomic. Yeah. And I was actually shocked. There's like chairs on Amazon, the top ones, like €1,000. And I was actually shocked. I was like, I didn't realize people were buying €1,000 chairs on Amazon. But the term premium is thrown around quite a bit, but like I think, you know, like there's massage guns on Amazon for $50 and then there's massage guns on Amazon for $200. There's so much traffic on Amazon that there's always people that are willing to spend a bit more for something that appears more premium and hopefully is more premium. It is the approach that we take, because the reality of Amazon is the Chinese sellers, they dominate everything and they can always get better prices than you. So this is one of the problems with launching a product like a massage gun, where you just buy it from Alibaba, you put your logo on it, and then you try and sell it because you've not improved the product, you've not made a more premium version. So you're selling it for $70. The Chinese can sell it for like $50 or $60.
You're only competing on price.
So you want to do as much as you can to not be competing on price. Yeah. And the way that you do that is by either being perceived, well, two way, you know, you want to be perceived as being of higher quality, and you also want to actually be higher quality, and then you can charge a higher price, and then you're not competing on price then anymore.
Gotcha. All right, before you guys go, because we've only got a few more minutes, just on the PPC side, are you doing just advertising just on Amazon, or are you looking to advertise outside of Amazon, Facebook, Google, and things like that as well?
He's the PPC expert.
At the moment, to be honest, we do only on Amazon. There's a big kind of like a big hype train. I don't know if it's a hype train, but there's a lot of hype recently around external traffic on Amazon. And in our experience, it's not really been that great. Obviously, you've got the issues that you've got with Facebook now with all of the tracking since the iOS update and stuff. What we are trying to do is like we're sponsoring a podcast. It's kind of difficult to track, but we're trying to do more sort of like brand awareness type things than actual direct advertising, to be honest, because as we're growing the product portfolio, our products are in a niche that the community is very sort of active. So we're trying to do a lot of like type brand awareness type stuff. We've tried, Google AdWords, we've tried Reddit ads. They're just, A, they're difficult to track, and B, if you can track them, we've generally not seen great results, and we see really great results with just the Amazon advertising. But yeah, there's options that you can try. Our sort of like take on it is like you should always experiment. So just because it's not worked for us, doesn't mean that it might not work for your product or your niche. So experiment with everything, but in our experience it's not really been that great, so we are only really running Amazon PPC.
I think as well, just one little point on that is Amazon's definitely getting more and more pay to play. So when we started out, it was I mean, there used to be no charges for advertising. If you go on the cert page now, like on the results page or any keyword, there's maybe four at the top. There's one down the side. There's a video. There's four. It's like, it's crazy how many. And I think Jeff Bezos once said he was against advertising, so he obviously changed his mind when he's getting like $40 billion a year.
When he's getting super yachts and whatnot.
But yeah, so we it's definitely a pay to play. But if you have a lot of people on Amazon, like I said earlier, they sell products in this kind of $20-$25 ballpark. So to get a click from Google. Like Amazon is not cheap, but it's generally a bit cheaper than Google AdWords, for example. So if they previously you couldn't really track it very well, so if you're just burning $2-$4 a click on, and people on Google as well, they haven't got the same buying intent as someone on Amazon. On Amazon, people are ready to shop; they have their credit cards already literally in the system. So if you Google it, you're in the research phase. You're going to click that ad. Yeah, maybe you might come back to the product, but like Alex said, it's so hard to track. They are getting better at it. So it's kind of Amazon attribution they've launched now. So it's definitely not great yet, but it's something that I think as you scale, like with the level we're at now, we're definitely testing more. So you can do obviously Reddit ads, Pinterest ads. We had a conversation with someone recently about that they're going to do a high ticket item. We're talking like a couple of $1,000. They're thinking of doing YouTube ads and doing a video ad on YouTube, which is something people I don't think have done at all really for Amazon.
No.
But obviously Amazon do definitely like that external traffic. So if you're getting eyeballs from YouTube to Amazon, they're going to reward you for sure. But you need that. Again, that's why you need a huge ROI. You need that buffer to run these tests. And then I think in a couple of years time, if we're still holding on to the brand, I'd be very surprised if we're not doing more external stuff. Yeah. I think you just at the beginning, you just... across the board at the beginning, like just focus on Amazon, build it to a certain point on Amazon. Don't worry about Shopify. Almost don't worry about, people love to build, say like a Facebook group around their products, but almost before they've even got a brand, just focus on the fundamentals first, get it to a good level. And then you start experimenting off Amazon.
Awesome. Well, I know you guys got to run. So before you go, where can people follow you to kind of keep up with what you're doing in your brand?
Yeah, I mean, the main ones are YouTube and Twitter. So YouTube, we are The Honest Entrepreneurs. We're almost at 1,000 subscribers as well. So,
oh, yeah, we'll get you there then.
Any yeah, hopefully this will tip us over the edge.
It's a long slog.
Oh, God, it's long, yeah. And then we're on Twitter as well. I am at... The Alex,
Alex.
I'll put it in the description.
I'm going to have to check it.
I'm at The Honest Tom. If you search us, you'll find us. We're a massive deal on Twitter now.
You're up and trending.
Yeah, Twitter and YouTube, basically. Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Thanks, guys, for coming on. I really appreciate it. Hopefully, the listeners got something good out of this. And we'll see all the listeners next time.
Cool. James.
Thanks for tuning in, and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.